You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 bacon bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show. Today on the James Altucher Show.
Everybody feels that fear right now across the board, for different reasons, but they feel the fear. A lot of the people protesting are doing it because they don't feel seen and heard. That people protesting are scared. The African-American community is scared and fearful, like after what happened, right?
Yeah.
Everybody is, and it's across the board. Everybody is in fear mode right now, between the virus, between the protests, for all various different reasons.
Well, that's just it. Like, I don't know anybody
right.
who doesn't believe in these issues. Like,
that's right.
Obviously, it's horrible what happened, and it's horrible what happens all around the country. But I will say it's horrible also to see, like, I'm really disappointed in social media, where I can just go on now social media and see a snuff video of, like, for instance, that St. Louis cop who was shot by looters. You could just watch a 6-minute video of him breathing his last breath while he's bleeding out on the ground and trying to move his mouth, and looters are screaming. I only wanted a TV set. Like, so yes, I watched that video, but it's like, I'm disturbed by what's going on. Like, what's sort of held up as, like, social media, and what's banned from social media. And I don't know, to me, the world does seem still a little upside down with all this, although I do see the other side. On the one hand, I agree with you, there's going to be reforms. On the other hand, I don't see real leadership, as opposed to, like, the 1960s, where there was Martin Luther King and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. This past 30 years, there really hasn't been anything, but there has been a much greater sophistication about how to manipulate the population. This is the backdrop for, like, what you're seeing in the actual data now. People want to know safety on, like, let's say 10 different levels. And how do you see people using that data to make their lives, businesses, campaigns, messages, whatever, better? And how do you see that affecting society? Once again, friend of the podcast, Phil Stutz, on the show. Phil, welcome.
Good to be here.
Phil,
hold on. Let me start out by saying this.
Yes.
I was in your apartment in New York at the last day of February, and we were talking about the presidential election. And I think things have changed since then.
A little
not
bit.
Not just politics.
Not much, but, you know.
Yeah. All of us probably got COVID-19 in the meantime, but it's good to
that
be
was
back.
Probably like the last podcast I did in the apartment, and then they were shut down. I think I was about to head to the Netherlands, or did I just get back from the Netherlands? I forget.
I don't remember
either. But so just by way of introduction, Phil is a you've done so many things. You start out as an online campaign manager. Like, you ran campaigns for senators, governors, congressmen, presidents. So, and you've written a book about it. I forget the name of your book. We did
fire,
a podcast.
Fire Them Now, The Seven Lies Digital Marketers Sell.
Right, because then you were transitioning, and you'd already transitioned from doing online campaigns, which you still do, but now you've been taking those marketing techniques that you use in online campaigns, and you've been applying them to corporations. And it was great in our first podcast that we ever did. We've done like 3 or 4 now. In the first podcast, you kind of described from 2000 on the history of online campaigning and how it evolved each campaign, you know, all the way from the Bushes to the Trumps. And it was really fascinating how each you know, every 4 years it evolved. And I guess had it, you know, and then we talked about like just, you know, you know, how those campaign techniques apply to online marketing, how anybody can use those techniques.
Yeah.
And then last time we met, we did two podcasts. We talked about the election, but we also talked about data and what you were seeing in the data. But now the world has changed, mm-hmm. and the data you're seeing is much different. And what I just wanted to describe, because you and I talk frequently on the phone, we've been working on different projects together, and you take these surveys where you show what is important to people, and this is important to this the data that you come up with. The results you come up with are important not only for people running for president or Congress or people running companies, but they're also important to people like me or the people listening, which is what messages are people want to hear right now, what messages people need to hear. And for me, I never really changed my message, but it was refreshing to hear some of our latest conversations that these were the messages, these were the words that I've always been using, but for years, like let's say from 2015 to 2020, they were not really useful because everyone was like, oh, here's my private jet and all my, you know, all my money. And that those were the things that influencers and online personalities and companies and so on were those were the things that were important to people. But now they're not. And we'll talk about that in this podcast. We're going to talk about data. We're going to talk about elections. We're going to talk about all things in the new normal, the data of the new normal. But because I love elections, I have to start off there.
Well, hold on. There's no new normal. It's just new, right?
You're right. Because by the way, the old normal, and I'll use that phrase for the last time, the old normal wasn't really so great anyway. Like, who gives a shit that it's new? It's the normal has changed. I'm actually pretty happy as long as there isn't chaos. I feel for the first time in, at least in my lifetime, we have flirted with a bad outcome. 9/11, I always was optimistic. Great recession, I was actually laughed off CNBC because I was so optimistic, even though I was correct. And then eventually I was invited back. But this is the first time in my adult life where I've thought to myself, you know what? There are possible bad outcomes here. Although now I'm starting to be more optimistic, actually, for various reasons. But back in January, when I first saw Wuhan was closing factories, I called up, and it's easy for me to say this in retrospect, but I was saying this back in January and February in my podcast and so on. I was calling up everyone I knew who had factories, and I said, look, order a year in advance right now, yep, or you're in trouble. This is right before the Chinese New Year, and only one person out of like 20 listened to me, and I get thank you notes every single day. And but I did, in my mind, and I had this conversation with my wife, Robin, I said, you know what? There could potentially be unrest and rioting in the streets. And she said, well, so what? We'll just get a camper and live in the woods, like survivalists. And I'm like, no, I don't want to do that. Like, I'm not made to do that. I like where I am right now. I like the status quo. But here we are flirting with disaster, although I'm a little more optimistic than I was, let's say, a week ago. But that's where I'm at. And you know, we've had these conversations all throughout, like what opportunities exist, mm-hmm. what things to keep in mind. But tell me what you've been up to lately. And by the way, Phil, a lot of people have asked, well, hey, when's part two of that podcast with Phil coming out? Because you were going to talk about data and what data is important. And I said, I don't know, because it's all new data now. So what have you been up to?
Yeah, so a little refresher. The way that I have always looked at data comes from my background in politics, which is in every campaign I've ever run, whether it's a national campaign or a state campaign or a local campaign, we always go in and look at the data before we work with our politician to understand how to communicate to the voters. And what I mean by that is, and this is a very simple way of putting it, but we'll go take a poll in the district or the state or nationally to understand voter sentiment, to understand what moves them to vote for a certain candidate or vote on an issue. And what we do is we align where the politician believes and the pretty much the highest level policy ideas with the voters and where they have alignment. You know, typically a politician comes to me and they want to run on 10 or even 20 issues. And I'm like, oh my God, please no. And usually with the voters, we'll find two issues where they have alignment with the politician, but those issues rise to a level that could decide the election, right?
So let me ask you this, Phil, though. Has any politician ever changed their issues or changed their ideas based on what the polls told them? Like, in other words,
there's
kind
a lot
of a political...
Oh, God, the majority of them. That's not how I work. I'm always trying to find alignment. I think an authentic candidate runs more successfully than an inauthentic candidate. I think you can read between the lines when a candidate sees poll numbers and runs out and talks about them. But if the candidate truly believes in 10 issues, but two of them rise to the level that you can win the election, we're only really going to talk about those two issues, right? So that's how we've always looked at it. And so we applied sort of that standard in how we looked at corporate marketing. In fact, I always say I love the politician, but I deeply care about the voter and what they think. And in corporate marketing, we always look at the customer or the client, right? B2B or B2C. And we're like, I love the company we're working for, but I'm obsessed with how the consumer is looking at that product or service and then how we can convert. And so I partnered with the largest data collection, analytics, and AI company in America, got an exclusive licensing agreement, and then we're able to take our client's customer base or client base and overlay that online and track the movements, not just what people say, but track their, because we have their IP address, we can track their movements, and then we can develop an understanding of what their values are in life. We can understand what social media platforms they're going to in a chronological order. For instance, we did work with an Instagram influencer that sold products, and she had hundreds of thousands of followers. She sold hair care products, and we went in and overlaid her entire follower and customer base, tracked them online. She came to us and said, I want to move over to Facebook and build my brand on Facebook, because she had built this huge following on Instagram. And when we got the data back, it said that her customer base was that Facebook was the fourth performing platform for her customer base. She was about to invest all this money into Facebook, not realizing that that was the fourth performing social media platform that her customer base went to. The number one was Pinterest. It wasn't even Instagram. Instagram was number two.
And she goes, go to Pinterest? I didn't even know that.
Yes. And she, oh, yeah, absolutely. And so she's like, my God, I never even thought about building my brand on Pinterest. And so that's how, you know, as we look at this data, we're trying to eliminate the risk and find the alignment between the customer and the business. And so when coronavirus broke out in early March.
Wait, Phil, one question. How is she doing on Pinterest? Has she been building her brand there?
A little bit. It's hard to get people, even when they see the data, to make the commitment. I always say there are two types of business owners, committed and interested. Interested are really interested in ideas until they have to execute them, and then a shiny object comes by and they move on. Committed goes, we're all in this. So like, we do this for a New York City law firm, and the owner of that law firm has doubled his business in the last year because that guy is freaking committed. Like, he was like,
what did you show him?
What did the data? The data showed a certain level of how the consumer really wanted to be talked to and communicated with. It showed that they were all on mobile devices, and so we ran a mobile-only campaign. It showed what kind of branding we needed to do. Frankly, this law firm was like, all of our business comes from referrals, and we want to get out of the referral business. We want to not pay referral fees. And I think we've 6x'd his non-referral business in a year because we worked through the data, we optimize constantly, and this guy's totally committed. And so, this is the difference. There are two types of business owners, right? But the data always tells us which way to go. And so in March, after I did this podcast with you, we pivoted and we said, my God, something's changed. We got to get in front of this for our clients. And we thought we would charge our clients for it. And so we undertook a massive data project with our data partner and to see what had shifted, what sentiment, messages, what platforms, what consumers were doing now that they were going into lockdown. This was in late March after the lockdown went into effect. And we got such incredible insights that I was like, you know what? This is one of those moments you just got to give it away. So we gave it away to our clients, all this data, and we invested a lot of money in it. And we gave it away. And then I went, you know what? We got to give this away to anybody. And so we, and you know, I'll offer it to the people listening now, but we have now completed three massive consumer surveys about the changing and adapting purchase decision behavior of the American consumer. Let me give you the sort of the background on what it is. We've now surveyed 16,853 Americans. We've matched it to 200 million plus Americans in our database, American consumers.
You mean by matched, you mean you sort of...
We build profiles and then match them to people in the consumer database.
Right. So if someone's like a Japanese male with a Ford pickup truck, you matched it to all the other Japanese males with Ford pickup trucks living in
the Florida area. Yeah, and you develop psychological profiles, and you can, you know, make assumptions on basically how they're moving online. We're also tracking 550 million connected devices of the American consumers, and we're tracking, this is the other part that's really important, 10 billion with a B, daily online decisions by the American consumer base. So it is massive what we've done, and we've done three surveys, one at the end of March, one at the end of April, and then we just came out with one, which is why we're talking right now. I'm going to walk through that. We've expended a lot of money on this. To date, I've had 42,119 downloads of our reports because we've given them away for free, and I've had a lot of people reach out to me and say it's fundamentally changed their company in a moment where they didn't know what to do. I'm going to tell you how messages have changed, how consumers want to receive messages, even after all the protests over the last couple of weeks. And I'm talking about non-coronavirus protests. And it's really been a game changer for a lot of people. And so I feel like my mission right now is just to be an advocate to tell people what they need to know. Because I think if they download this report, and they, you know, I'm writing about the findings, and you can read my synopsis, and we'll go over that. But I think if you implement these things right now, you have about a 3 to 6 month advantage over your competition. I know
you don't think these sentiments change pretty quickly, because I mean they obviously changed a lot once the lockdown and the coronavirus hit. But maybe now, you know, that was an extreme event. Maybe now you're saying they don't really change. And also, we were in an area that's not at full employment. There's 40 million people have filed for unemployment. You know, we're just in a different world now. It's going to change more slowly than it changed between February 28th and March 10th.
So I think the earthquake happened. I've never seen messaging shift so much in 24 years of marketing in March. And now we're just seeing aftershocks. So we're seeing small aftershocks that are shifting the messaging a little bit. So what happened in March was we went from an economy over the last 10 years that everything was, you just said this in the lead-in, right? Everything was based on influence and wealth. Like, let me show you how smart I am, how what my status is, my influence. Yeah. If you buy this product, you'll look this great. You'll look, you know, I'm writing about it that's coming out to my subscriber list soon, but Coca-Cola at the end of the year had an ad campaign that said, open a Coke, open happiness. Oh, isn't that nice? That was in December of 2019.
Now I can't even imagine opening up a Coke and getting happiness.
Right,
so now
happiness. Their messaging is staying apart is the best way to stay united.
But I feel, I feel like I can see through that, and that's like
of course
virtual
you can.
Signaling or
right.
pandering.
That, yes.
Like who doesn't see
but,
through that?
But Coca-Cola, Facebook, Google, they're all doing this right now, and those are all data companies. Coca-Cola is a data company. So what I'm saying is if you can see how they're acting, then that's a good indicator of how you probably need to adjust. And what we found in March, the March survey surveyed 4,888 consumers. We had surveyed these people in January before the coronavirus had really gone, you know, was all over the place. And then we resurveyed them. And so we were able to see really what changed. And really we found three messages that would work no matter what. And that was you had to message your product or service around helping others. People were more concerned about the health of their family and friends than they were about themselves. You had to position yourself around trust, and you had to position your brand, your product, your service around safety. Those three things, that's all that matters. You just said it. I've written about it a ton. The Instagram influencer who showed their ass on a beach or their abs and they were holding up a watch and saying, you know, buy this watch, and they got paid $10,000 and got a bunch of swag for it. That economy is essentially gone, and it will be potentially gone forever. At the very least, you're going to see about 80% of that market go away. And the reason that is because nobody wants to see that right now. People have lost jobs. The economy has retracted. People were in their homes, and they didn't want to know how great your life is. If you're look, this is a great lesson in just social media. If you're on social media right now, forget marketing, and you're out there telling people how great the corona life is, you're tone deaf. You can't do that. That is not, it's not the woke crowd that's pushing back. It's everybody that's pushing back. No one wants to see how great your life is. And so this economy that had been built on showing you how great you could be if you just followed these people, liked these people, followed their, bought their products, all that stuff, it's gone. It's gone.
You know, and it's funny because, and this, so around March 12th, I think, which was like the first day of the lockdown, I decided to start doing these Instagram lives because there was all this data. We were getting flooded with data, and there was so much uncertainty. So data about the coronavirus, and there was so much uncertainty. Nobody knew the infection rate, the fatality rate, right, whether it was going to, how badly it was going to hit the U.S., what age groups it hit. Nobody knew anything. How bad was the lockdown going to be? How long were we going to be locked down?
Yeah.
Every day there was new, more and more restrictions, state, depending on what state you were in. So I started doing these hourly Instagram lives. I had never done that before. And I saw overwhelmingly what you just said, which is that that was, people weren't asking, what stock should I buy? People were asking, like, is there immunity? Is there, you know, how bad is there going to be? Is it really going to be the case that 10 million people in the United States are going to die from coronavirus? Like, that's what people just needed to know. They just needed comfort, really. They needed to be held a little bit. Like, and hugged.
Yeah, so we work
for,
we've talked about this company before. We work for a national pest control company, and we shifted them in early March. Then once we got the data, we went really hardcore with them. We didn't say, hire us, coronavirus, right? What we found was, and this is also from the data, that the consumer, the American consumer went from a value system of buying things because they wanted them to buying things only because they needed them. And I think that's a really important distinction. It still exists right now.
Yeah.
And so everybody was opening up their budgets and going, what do I cut? And so we position all of our clients to say, you got to have a clear, loud message that says you can't cut us in this moment. So for the pest control company, we said, you know, you're quarantined in your, this is back in March and April, like we've shifted them again just a couple of weeks ago. But March and April and May, we were saying, you're stuck in your home, you're under quarantine, you're eating every meal in your home, it's bug season, right? Spring and summer's coming. Like, you've got to make sure rodents and pests are in your home bringing diseases. You need to keep a high immunity in your home. We'll come. We'll spray your house. We'll wear gloves, masks, face guards. We'll make sure your pets aren't exposed to any harmful chemicals. We'll take care of you. All of that messaging was around helping others. The result of that, we just finished a case study on it, is that we were running A/B tests at the same time. We were running the typical spring, summer, bug season ads like we typically do, and we ran these corona ads because we wanted to know the difference.
Well, what do the typical ads say?
Oh, it was bug, and you know, spring and summer are huge in the bug business. I don't know. I mean, I have to know all this, right? But it's huge because that's when bugs come out. So people in the winter, they don't have as many bugs, they don't call them. But once March comes around, everything heats up, right? So we were running the typical bug spring ads that we always do that always work. And what we found was we had between a 2 and 4x conversion, more higher conversion rate with our safety helping others and trust ads as opposed to typical spring and, you know, and summer bug season ads. So, and we just completed a case study on it. We call it, you know, like our first COVID-19 case study, and we're going to put it on our website for everybody to read.
What is the typical spring ad for a pest control company? Is it like, hey, spring is here, time to call us back?
That's right.
But wouldn't they want to say the same thing? Like, hey, spring is here, make sure the rodents aren't in your food.
Yeah, you just shift the message slightly. And it's like the one thing you can't cut, we said, was your pest control company because they're there to keep you safe.
But what I'm trying to understand, what is the typical spring ad? What's the difference?
Sure, it's termites, it's specific bugs, because it's like, hey, don't let roaches come into your house. It's spring and summer. Like, we're talking about specific bugs that come out in certain seasons, right? We weren't talking about specific bugs. We were talking about, you know, we're here to keep you safe.
Got it.
We're here to help you. We're here to help your family. That was the main crux of it. Is it a massive like switch? No. But it's enough that we drove much higher conversion rate on that particular ad campaign.
That's great. So what are you seeing in the data right now?
Yeah.
Like you said, you've shifted also again.
What we found is now that the economy has, first of all, it's weird. Consumer confidence has actually never waned. And the reason that we see that is people got their $1,200, $2,400, $3,600 government check. The people that work for the employees of this country, their companies, most of them got the PPP funding. The stock market rebounded. The economy started opening up again. And frankly, people who typically, you know, don't save money, that money was just sitting in their bank account. And people on unemployment were making high unemployment insurance, right? Their payments. And so we just didn't see a lot of consumer confidence wane. Now that the economy is opening back up, people are now spending that money. People are now going back to work. We just saw the jobs report, which was shock to everybody, that we've added 2.5 million jobs. And so people are going to spend the money. Do I think they're going to spend it forever? No. I think that you're going to have this huge bump in the summer. And then I think in the fall, when kids go back to school, I think families are going to look at their, depending on where we are, where the coronavirus is and all that, I think people are going to look at their budgets again and tighten the belt. But I think right now, they are flush with cash and they're ready to spend. And so if you're a business owner not positioned for that, you're going to lose an opportunity. On the messaging, so helping others, James, you know, I said it's safety, trust, and helping others. That's what worked in March, April, and May. We have now seen in the latest data that we're releasing right this week is that helping others is starting to fade away. That everybody...
Screw my grandma.
Yeah, everybody. And it's really mostly among men. And I'll tell you why. It's women are still, you know, still medium on helping others. But even there, that support has waned. And here's why. The number one issue is safety. And now you add in all the Black Lives Matter protests, and safety has been put on steroids even more. And so we're tracking the protest movements right now to understand consumer sentiment around that, and we'll release that in a couple of weeks because we want to see the full effect from all the violent protests to the peaceful protests to everything settling down, and then where does it settle in sort of consumer and purchasing behavior, right? We just don't know that yet. But safety is all about safety right now.
Yeah, because Phil, let me just add that. So obviously, you know, this is not discussing the importance or the issues of these protests, but I will say again, among the people I've interacted with and gotten questions from, yes, everybody was kind of anxious and depressed at the beginning of the lockdown, and they wanted to know what was going on. There was a lot of uncertainty, but now it's tinged with a little bit more fear. Like it's, you know, beforehand, people kind of always felt, well, I'm probably not going to get this disease, but I don't want other people to get it. I don't want to transmit it if I'm asymptomatic or whatever. But people felt comfortable walking around if they're protected and all that. Now I feel like everybody, the majority of people are not protesting, right? The majority of people are still sitting at home or they're seeing the protests on TV and seeing all the news, but they're scared because is society, just when they thought things were going to get better, is society falling into some kind of anarchy? There's a lot of confusion about what's happening in society. So now they're legitimately scared for not just themselves, but the structure of society.
And the people protesting are scared. The African-American community is scared and fearful, like after what happened, right?
Yeah.
Everybody is, and it's across the board. Everybody feels that fear right now across the board that for different reasons, but they feel the fear. A lot of the people protesting are doing it because they don't feel seen and heard, right? Not African Americans. I'm talking about mostly, and we're seeing this in the data, right? Mostly like the younger generation of white Americans are saying, yeah, I want my voice to be heard because they don't feel seen and heard, and they want to show everybody how great they are by standing up for this particular issue. And everybody is in fear mode right now between the virus, between the protests, for all various different reasons. And therefore, the theme, the messaging around safety, and it doesn't run around and say, we're going to keep you safe, or, you know, like, you don't have to scream safety. You have to figure out how to nuance it, right? And you have to figure out where, how it works. And you have to be authentic to whatever your brand, your business is, whatever it is. It's really important right now.
Yeah, I feel like you can't be angry about what's happening. You have to kind of weave your way through to see the other side where there might be solutions. Like, you have to kind of show that okay, this is a bad time. We've been through this before. There's going to be solutions, and we'll kind of get out of this. There'll be some sort of reform of some level or other, and then we'll start incorporating these reforms back into what's ahead for society.
And you'll see a lot of reforms. Both Republicans and Democrats are going to work through that, right? I think my frustration is that you have a generation of people who see the injustices and inequality. They've never actually done anything about it, but then they post a black picture on Instagram and call out anybody that doesn't, yet they've never taken any action to help anybody on the inequality front. Whereas you have another generation, probably our generation, where maybe we haven't talked about it, but maybe for the last 20 or 30 years, we've worked on inequality issues. Maybe we've gotten our hands dirty, and we don't feel like we need to put up a social post or a black picture because, you know, I always say talk alone is cheap. I'm all for talk. I'm all for talking about these issues and getting them out and listening and all that. I think you have to have action behind it. I think you need to put your money where your mouth is. Put money into it. Help other people. If you're just talking, then you're a poser. And it reminds me of the Instagram economy.
Yeah.
I mean, have you seen how many of these influencers are looking at this as an opportunity? Because they got nothing going on right now. They can't make money. They can't do anything. And so they're grabbing onto this. And I think the American public is scared, right, that the non-protesters are scared to say anything because they're going to be attacked. But maybe most of the American public believes in the same issues that people are protesting right now.
Well, that's just it. Like, I don't know anybody
right
who doesn't believe in these issues. Like,
that's right.
Obviously, it's horrible what happened, and it's horrible what happens all around the country. But I will say it's horrible also to see, like, I'm really disappointed in social media where I can just go on now social media and see a snuff video of, like, for instance, that St. Louis cop who was shot by looters. You could just watch a 6-minute video of him breathing his last breath while he's bleeding out on the ground and trying to move his mouth, and looters are screaming. I was just a TC. I only wanted a TV set. Like, so yes, I watched that video, but it's like, I'm disturbed by what's going on. Like, what's sort of held up as like social media and what's banned from social media. And I don't know, to me, the world does seem still a little upside down with all this. Although I do see the other side. On the one hand, I agree with you. There's going to be reforms. On the other hand, and I'm curious your opinion on this. On the other hand, I don't see real leadership as opposed to like the 1960s where there was Martin Luther King and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. When, you know, when Martin Luther King was assassinated, Robert F. Kennedy stood up and made a speech that quelled some of the rioting that was happening. 1992, we had the riots that were happening, and Rodney King stood up and said, hey, let's not do this. Can't we all just get along? He famously said.
You even stuttered like him.
Well, you know, I'm trying to be an actor, yeah, so you know. Ahead. But this past 30 years, there really hasn't been anything, but there has been a much greater sophistication about how to manipulate the population. And so what we're seeing now, I'm afraid, is somebody or some, you know, groups or media or who knows what. There's no leadership is what I'm saying. And there's issues, but there's no solutions. Although I do feel that reforms will happen.
I agree. I think the leadership that I would want to hear from right now are African-American cops. That's the ones that I would, like you had, I think, Eric Adams on the other day.
Yeah, like, Eric Adams is great. But
that's who I want to listen to right now.
Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like, I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a three-year period, and I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs, and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a three-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers and he waited a little too long and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now you can try it for free at ziprecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop. Really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Welcome to the Canva guided meditation for stress at work. Impending deadline? Generate Canva presentations in seconds.
So fast.
Brainstorm got too big? Ooh. Summarize with AI in a click. Click, click, click. Writer's block? Release with Canva Magic Write.
Magical.
Stress less and save time at canva.com. Designed for work.
You know, I think a lot of people also, I think a lot of the Eric Adams of the world, and believe me, I'm a huge fan of Eric. You've been at my house when Eric was over. We all had a chance to talk to him. And for those who don't know, he's the Brooklyn Borough President. He's running for mayor of New York City. And he's an African-American. He was in law enforcement for 22 years where he did advocate for many reforms that happened. But I think also he's looking to see how the younger generation is going to step up and provide some leadership.
Well, that's my whole point. The younger generation needs to stop just talking. They need to have actions behind it. Because, like, personally, for me, I've worked on these issues for 20 years in inner city D.C. and inner city New Orleans. And I don't feel the need to put a black picture up on Instagram.
Right.
If that's all you're doing, and then you're going to call out other people, right? I think this is where we're going sideways as a culture. We can go down this avenue forever, but you know, that's just really my standpoint. That's where I stand.
Yeah,
right now.
Yeah. But this is the backdrop for like what you're seeing in the actual data now, which is, you know, you're right. An increased need. People want to know safety on, like, let's say 10 different levels of what the word safety might mean. And how do you see that? How do you see people using that data to make their lives, businesses, campaigns, messages, whatever better? And how do you see that affecting society? And how might it change once these protests are done and we're all back at work?
Yeah, so why don't we talk about sort of the disruptions from the safety, because it's clear in the data. And again, you guys can put it up. I'll go ahead and just tease this right now. You can go to my company's website, winbigmedia.com. You go to the tab that says COVID-19 Consumer Research, and you click on it, and there is no funnel, there's no email opt-in, there's no nothing. You just download the report, right? And I've got all three reports there. I have my analysis there. It's all for anybody. I would say the one thing that keeps sticking out is all the future disruption of the economy and the businesses that are going to be disrupted. It's very clear in this data, a few things. I was screaming in March, oh my God, the restaurant industry reminds me of the housing industry from 2008, that the restaurant industry had exploded since 2000. For 20 years, in Washington, D.C., there was a restaurant called Ham and Sherry. That's all they served, James, was ham and sherry. That's
well,
it.
That's like New York City, I forget the name of the restaurant, but there's a restaurant that only serves rice pudding.
Right, right. And I mean, it was like people in Vegas in 2008 that owned 27 homes, right? And they were just renting them out, and then all of a sudden, boom, everything went bust, right? And they didn't have to put any money down. It was the restaurant industry. The restaurant industry was way overinflated. And I went, oh my God, like even when we come back, you know, I live in this small beach town in Florida. Emeril Lagasse lives down here. He's got a restaurant down here. He's not opened any of his restaurants back up at all. And ultimately, the only way I can think about it is like, well, he must feel like he'll lose more money at 30% capacity than he would opening back up again.
Of course. I mean, like, look, I'm not Emeril Lagasse. I own a bar. And
right.
25% capacity is okay on like a Tuesday or a Wednesday, but you need 150% capacity on Friday and Saturday.
And your bar, having people 6 feet apart at a bar is not
impossible.
It's impossible. And so I went, man, the restaurant industry is going to, you know, have a massive retraction, right?
Well, and also just to verify that, like walking around New York City right now, it's not even like, of course, every restaurant is closed, but it's not that they're just closed. About even now with all the stimulus and all the loans out there, I would say a good 20% are gone forever, meaning
yes.
I see for rent signs instead of closed signs. So if 20% now are for rent. When this opens up, that number has to double. So it's at least 40 to 50% in New York City. All restaurants, maybe even all storefronts, are closed forever, but definitely all the restaurants.
Then you go into commercial retail. Like, that's another one no one's talking about. But how do these stores, social distancing, they haven't been open in 3 months. How many of them go away forever? Not all of them. I don't mean that. Don't go to extremes. But if 20% of the commercial retail business goes out of business, that is a massive hit. Then you go, well, what about commercial real estate? If there are restaurants and commercial retail, and by the way, everybody's working on Zoom, and of course people are going to go back to offices, but is everybody going back to an office? No. What if that's another 20%, 30% hit? What if it's just a 10% hit where business owners are like, why am I paying $10,000 a month in rent? We just Zoomed for 3 months and it worked. And so you're going to see commercial real estate completely massive. Now, what we just found in this last data that we just went through was there are more disruptions. Other industries that we see are going to be disrupted, because here's what happened. Between 35 and 45% of Americans are saying they need a vaccine before they will actively take public transportation, book hotels, including Airbnb, HomeAway, order a ride share, Uber, Lyft, and 52% of all Americans want reduced capacity before they will travel anywhere outside of their state. And I'm writing about this now, but there was a couple articles that came out. Airbnb is out there running around going, bookings are back, bookings are back, everything's going great. But when I looked into it, they're actually booking at a massive rate right now, Airbnb, all local and within the state of the people living, which is backing up what this data says.
Why? How come people are booking an Airbnb right next door?
Because they want to get the hell out of their house.
So they're just saying, okay, we'll do a staycation down the block.
I've already done Airbnb. Two staycations in the last 2 weekends. Yeah, I mean,
Where'd you go?
I went to Point Clear, Alabama, and we did one in our little town. We just went to one of these nice little hotels, my wife and I did, and got away. And like she said the whole weekend, like, oh my God, we got out of the house. I'm so happy right now, right?
You know, it's funny because as you're saying this too, last night, Robin and I, for the first time since February or early March, we ate inside a restaurant. It was unbelievable.
Felt good, didn't it?
It was so weird. Like, it was weird. But also to confirm your point, I was telling a friend of mine the other day, by the way, an extremely high IQ author, friend, one of the smartest people I know, well-known, intelligent person. And first question he asked me, because he heard I was going to go on a plane because I went from New York to Florida, he said, aren't you afraid to fly the plane? And I'm like, no, but maybe because I've kind of been neck deep in all the virus data, I wasn't afraid. But I was really stunned that he was afraid. And so if he's afraid, and this is, again, one of the smartest people I know on the planet, how many other people must be afraid?
So, I mean, like, if I was running the airlines or if I was running Uber, everything would be about not only safety. There's this other hook in the messaging that you got to use, that we're moving away from sort of a global thinking economy, and people really find safety in local businesses or local connections with your company. So if I'm Uber and Lyft, I'm saying, here are all the safety measures we're going to take, and we're employing people in this local community. I would do local ads all over the country talking about how we are giving jobs in a moment people are laying off to the local and helping the local economy, and we'll spray between every ride, and we have recirculated it. You know, I don't know. I'm just making it all up. But like, they should be focusing on how they're providing safety to their passengers, and it helps the local economy. And the same thing for like airlines. Like, there have been, you've read no stories of massive outbreaks on airplanes or with airline flight attendants, like nothing. So it's safe. So why aren't they spending a ton of money right now? Because they're scared that they're never going to have money again, I guess, but they should be doing that. If I'm to look at, all right, so let me give you a couple other disruptions if you're good with that.
Well, the more disruptions, the better.
Yeah, so public transportation's massive. What are governments going to do? Because people are like, in fact, what we've seen in data is that people that take public transportation are now saying that they are going to go buy a cost-efficient car so that they feel safe in the car. So if you're an auto dealer right now, people haven't spent the money to to go in, you know, to buy cars. But I would go all in if I'm an automobile dealer right now, because they are, especially if you're like in a low cost automobile dealer, like if you're doing, you know, a certain set of cars that the working class Americans, they want to buy from you, and you've got to figure out how to set up deals and show people that it's cheaper to buy a car or lease a car or get a loan for a car than it is to take public transportation. That would crush right now.
And also, how would you structure the advertising? So they should all basically say, look, public transportation there's a long way to go before you can really ensure that public transportation is as safe as you'd like it to be for you and your family. Maybe now's the time to buy a car. Discounts this weekend, you know, you put in a little urgency. I don't know.
No, I would say this. If I was a car dealer, I would figure out how much it costs locally to take a bus every day to work and back, or the train every day back and work, you know, back and forth to work every day, or whatever it is, right? And then I would calculate that, and I would structure deals within my automobile dealership that would be $5 cheaper a month. And then, because I'm from politics and I love negative ads, I'd show people on a bus getting coughed all on, and then I'd say, here, you can save money and you get to be in your car safe alone, you know?
What do you mean about the $5 cheaper thing?
So let's say it costs the average person. I used to take the bus when I lived in DC. Now that I live in Florida, I don't. But I take my car to work. But if you found out it costs $250 a month to take public transportation to work every day, then I would structure an if I was a car dealer, I would structure borrowing or lease deals that would be $245 a month. Do you see what I'm saying?
I see. Okay. Yeah.
So the consumer goes, my God, these people, not only are they going to keep me safe in their car, I can afford that, right? And that person that I just saw on the ad getting coughed on a bus, I don't want to be that person anymore. Right. I don't want to go back to that.
Yeah, because I remember we talked about the whole local thing, and I was struggling to figure out what you meant, in terms of, and it's interesting because for the first time ever, I don't even like reading the news,
right,
let alone the local news, but for the first time ever, I've actually started looking at the local news. I know who Mayor de Blasio is. Not that I didn't before, but I'm aware of what he says now on a daily basis in New York City because it affects my life.
In the first data report we put out, we found out that 21% of all Americans were consuming local news. And if you added up MSNBC, CNN, Fox News, and all the cable networks combined, it was 20% of the American public was consuming them because they saw the inherent bias in their takes and in their news. And local news was beating all the cable networks. In fact, local news was performing at a higher level than people consuming Facebook and the New York Times combined. And the reason being is they saw their mayor on TV, their mayor of Key Biscayne, go on TV and say, here's what's going to happen. Phase one's going to open up in a week and a half. Or they saw the local businesses helping out families in need or people that had lost their jobs. They were finding out non-biased news about the coronavirus and the economy. And so they just trust me, local news has done terrible for years. And all of a sudden, it just completely shifted. And I haven't seen that in so long. It's crazy. And here's what we've seen since March, that has not waned. That people have actually that the cable networks have actually gone down in viewerships from that 20% mark that I just told you about. It's been slight. It's like 18%, but it's still in a trajectory of going down. And local news has sustained throughout this. So people are not tuning it out. So you've got to understand, they are looking for local angles because it's what they trust. It's not that Amazon's going away, but if there is a clothing store or some kind of local store and they can go and support that economy, the consumer would rather go support the local economy right now than the global economy right now.
So that's interesting. So do you think, like you mentioned the national news, like one thing maybe that I've seen, but it might be just my own thinking, is I'm just disgusted with all the national networks. And it doesn't even matter what I believe or not believe. I won't listen. I think they're all, like, whether it's CNN or MSNBC or Fox News or whatever, it's just all BS now. You know that they're all
ratings.
Just opinionating, and they're it's not – it's 50-50 whether any one article is accurate or not. Like, I can look at every article on any of these sites and point out where they're not accurate. Whereas you're right, like in local news, it's just facts. Like, okay, this is going to open up then. This is going to open up then. This is what the mayor just said. So it's like facts versus essentially what's a biased opinions on all the other sites.
And I'll give you another example.
Do you think people are aware of that? Like, do you think people know that now?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Two things. I'll go back to the local angle, but the one thing is this. People have tuned it out. In fact, if you just know that the national news is all about clicks and they're all about views, and that's because they're selling ads and they're trying to make money in a dying industry, right? And so all of this biasness and hate and everything they're doing is to try to get you riled up. They're trying to get you scared.
Yeah.
Because they make more money when you're scared, right? And it's working. My buddy, Warren St. John, who was one of the founders of Patch.com. You ever heard of Patch.com? It's like a local news aggregate online. It's like a digital news company, right? So they have Patch Birmingham, Alabama, and Patch San Jose, California. And it's all the local – it's aggregated local news, right? And I talked to Warren. I gave him this – I've kept giving him this data over the last few months. He's in New York. And he said their business is either – it's like doubled and tripled every month, like because like that's where eyeballs are going. People are scared and they want to go somewhere that makes them feel safe. Local is making people feel safe right now.
Yeah, like I have a friend who set up a business. I forget the exact URL, but it was something like areweopenyet.com. And it was just basically lists all the stores in every town that's open, and he's doing well.
That's super smart. If we're to go back to the disruptions, the one that's new that, again, it seems obvious, but let me walk into what the data is saying about it. It's the live events business. So we're talking sports. We're talking theater. We're talking movies. Right, movie theater where you go watch a movie in a crowd, concerts, stand up, right? And
hey, what are you saying? No, I'm just kidding. Obviously, I'm aware.
But
of that.
And a lot of people that we know, they have masterminds and they have four events a year where all these business owners come in and they study and hear from people on stage. And you and I are those speakers on stage. And those people are in deep trouble right now because the data is clear. Americans don't want to travel until there's a vaccine. And they don't. The thing that keeps popping is reduced capacity. They need reduced capacity until there's a vaccine, which you've said this many times. We may never have a vaccine, but they have.
Yeah,
it's about comfort,
unclear.
Right? They say vaccine now because in their brain, that's a comfortable position. But until we have that, the live events business is going to be – it's going to be a struggle for the live events business. And this is what the consumers are saying.
But let me ask you this. And I always use the analogy of drug rehab. So you go into drug rehab because you're using lots of drugs. And then 6 weeks later or 3 months later, you get out of drug rehab and you say, I'm never going to use drugs again. But then once you start hanging out with your friends and going to the local hangouts, you just start using drugs again. So as the economy reopens, does everyone who is saying, well, I'm not going to do X, Y, and Z until there's a vaccine and blah, 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 do they, after a few weeks of the economy being reopened, are they just going to be like, I guess I didn't need a mask after all?
And, well, that's what's happening.
Look at the protest. I just was at a protest the other day.
Right.
50,000 people gathered. They're all spitting on each other.
And look, in Florida, if you're like where I am in Florida, that's exactly what you see. So how does that mesh with what we're seeing? Well, you're right. The more we open up the economy, over time, there's going to be a comfort level. Maybe people go, all right, I don't have to be 6 feet, but I could be 3 feet, right? But it still doesn't bring the live events business back. Maybe the live events business kicks back in the fall, right? Let's just say best case scenario, it's the fall. Because I have a speech that was in April and I got punted to Vegas in the fall, right? And so I'm like, really, is that going to happen? But maybe it does, okay? But my thing is this, how many people out there in the live events business fall away? Even if it's 10%, that's a massive disruption because people are only going to choose the highest and best if they're going to do it. If they're going to put themselves at risk, even if they go, I don't want to deal with this anymore, I'm done. maybe they go, all right, I'll go to a ball game, but I'm really not going to a concert. Or maybe I'm going to go to a concert, but I'm not going to the basketball game. Like, I'm not going to Madison Square Garden, but I'll go, you know, over to the Yankee Stadium. I don't know. We'll see this as it shakes out. I do think that people will have a choice in live events. They're not going to do everything all the time like they used to do. And how much disruption does that incur overall into the economy of the live events business? And we already seen with sports, you know, they're saying no fans now. Like, I'm in the South, so college football is saying, well, we'll have half capacity. And what happens if there's a breakout after that? Then that's going to set that back a while. So there's just so much unknown. But right now, people are scared to be in the proximity, and it's clear in the data.
Yeah, I wonder how long right now lasts. Like, of course, there's the interpretation that right now is just today.
That's right.
And there's the interpretation that right now is the next 6 months and that we're in this new abnormal economy. And I think what you're saying is we'll wait and see, but it's not going to be as catastrophic a change as the change was in the data from January to March. Now we're kind of, we've got to just ease into whatever the next set of data says. It's not going to be a flip upside down all of a sudden again.
I don't think you're going to see a flip up down. I think what you're going to see is gradual, there'll be gradual movement, right? So safety, trust, helping others, those all still work, those messages. It's just that safety is more important in the brains of the consumers right now.
Yeah, like when I'm talking about finance, I find people don't say, they don't ask me, hey, what stock should I buy? It's going to go up 6,000%. They instead ask, hey, is there a risk of hyperinflation and the dollar going right away? Like, that's what they say. Now, again, that might change.
I have a buddy of mine that runs a massive annuity business, right? They're crushing right now because annuities are safe, right? So I mean, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, okay. So how are you positioning? So you're positioning your clients to, focus on local messages. Yep. If they can. Like, if Walmart was your client and Walmart's this national business, how would they position locally?
I would literally take a camera and run local ads and interview everybody that works in that store and let them tell their story about how what they went through and how they're grateful to be back at work and how important the community means to them and how important
Walmart means
to them.
And where would they advertise?
I mean, whether it's all over the local, it could be local digital platforms, it could be local news, it could be local radio. It's actually the traditional platforms are seeing a resurgence, right?
I think I read somewhere billboards are starting to see it take up.
The direct mail has had a huge comeback because everybody's home and yeah, they're getting their mail. Right. But, you know, you also have a large set of business owners that are scared half to death right now, and they're sitting in the corner sucking their thumb in the fetal position. And I'm saying, my God, like, rates have never been cheaper. Advertising could never be more effective. It doesn't mean you're going to 10x your business. But if you're able to bring enough new customers into your pool and then have a lifetime value attached to those people, in about 5 years, you could have an exponential growth in your company and dominate the market and, you know, be way past your competition. And that's how we're trying to position a lot of these clients that we have right now.
Do you ever look at Google Trends to see what phrases might be spiking up all of a sudden?
My team does. I don't. Yeah.
Because, like, one thing I noticed, and this is related to what you're saying, one thing I noticed is that bread machines and bread and new. So I think that after surgical masks, this was like a week ago, I noticed this. The top searched phrase on Pinterest was noodles. And on Shopify, after surgical masks and gowns, if I'm remembering correctly, it was bread machines. And the thing about bread and carbs is that they release serotonin, or they release tryptophan, which is a precursor to the neurochemical serotonin in the brain. And what that signals to the body is, hey, things are safe. Like, it's okay right now is okay. Like, dopamine is like, hey, things are about to get a lot better.
Yeah.
So that's dopamine. Like, oh, I got a lot of likes. I'm about to be famous. But serotonin is like, you know what? Things are great right now. That's the serotonin feeling. So you tend to feel more dopamine in the morning and serotonin at night when you're going to sleep. So, but bread is a comfort food. It's called a comfort food. So bread,
there's a great data point.
Bread machines, bread recipes, noodle recipes. These are good businesses right now.
That's right. All right, so I have one other disruption, mm-hmm. and this is going to trigger you because you've been screaming about this for years, okay? Screaming, and like you're on point, but I think it's important to talk about higher education. Why are students going to take out massive loans or families pay the tuitions of high five, low six figures to a campus that may go on lockdown and they have to go do their all their classes on Zoom again?
Yeah. And look, you could take.
I knew it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's ridiculous. Like campuses suddenly said, oh, guess what? You didn't have to be here anyway. Go home. Don't expect your $70,000 a year to go home with
That's
you.
Right.
We're keeping that.
Yeah.
I mean, campuses are being sued right now because they kicked kids out of their dorms and didn't refund the dorm rent even. And, you know, the school books are like $600 for a textbook. You could take a cooking class from Wolfgang Puck right now on masterclass.com. Why would you not do that rather than take some shitty class at a school?
And you'd be infinitely smarter by learning under the tutelage of someone actually in the industry you want to study in.
So,
the restaurant industry, I'm going to bookend it. The other is higher education is a major bubble and it is about to pop. And I don't know if you can short sell it, but if you could, that's an industry.
Well, here's how
you've been screaming how useless higher education is. I'm telling you their business model, how they've raised tuition to, on the versus the inflation rate or whatever.
Yeah.
It is in deep, deep trouble.
Oh yeah. Like here's just one statistic. Since 1977, not only has tuition gone up faster than inflation every single year, not just on average, but every single year tuition's gone up faster than inflation, but overall tuition's gone up 10x faster than inflation. Healthcare, which everyone always says, oh, healthcare costs is what make people go broke. Healthcare's only gone up 3x more than inflation. Tuition's just been a complete scam. But, here's what I would do is there's no way to short it, unfortunately. But here's what I would do if I was, all the states are asking for stimulus, like, which is just ridiculous. Like, why would I want to have my tax dollars instead of it going to one crime syndicate, the federal government, and have it sent over to another crime syndicate, which is the state government? The state government should just sell off their colleges before everyone realizes it's too late. Like colleges, that's valuable real estate, it's valuable buildings. Many colleges are associated with hospitals. Just sell off the whole thing before people privatize it all, before people realize it's a scam.
They'll never do that, and the only way they're going to survive is to do that.
Right. They'll never do that. They have to do that. They're not getting money from the government, and I don't know what's going to happen. So you bring up a couple of good things in the disruptions, which are scary, which is that commercial real estate is going to have a crisis similar to the financial crisis of 2008.
Go buy some commercial real estate in about 12 months because you're going to get some really good deals.
Yeah, and by the way, it's not so clear that maybe in some areas residential real estate will go down, like New York City, San Francisco, LA, because it's a little inflated. It's very inflated.
Totally.
But where you are right now in a beach town in Florida, your real estate's
right
going to double.
It has already done it. Like people cannot. Like so many people have our real estate friends are like, we cannot. We haven't breathed. We haven't taken a breath in 2 months because of so many people from. Now I'm in the northern. I'm in the panhandle of Florida. So people from Atlanta, Birmingham, Nashville, New Orleans. It's not like everybody, but there's enough that have said, you know what? If we're gonna be in quarantine, we might as well live at the beach. And that's there's been enough that it has just exploded our market.
Yeah, what I'm hearing from real estate agents is they're not even. It's not even like they're trying to, oversell, like, oh, you better act fast. Someone's about to make an offer 20% higher. What's actually happening is people are just sight unseen offering 50% higher, and the real estate agents are just out of inventory in places like Florida.
Right. Yeah.
So, and probably places like Austin, probably places like, I don't know.
And
where
by
else,
the way, we also don't have taxes, state taxes here, which is amazing.
Yeah, so a friend of mine
important.
Just moved to Puerto Rico where there's no federal taxes either.
Right. Oh.
So, But commercial real estate, that's a multi-hundred-billion-dollar industry. That you can't, if you're in New York City and you own a building and there was three restaurants on the bottom floor and a WeWork that was eight floors in your building, and WeWork's going to go out. You can't replace a pizza restaurant with a clothing store. It's got a kitchen in it. Like, you just can't replace these things. And there's no one who wakes up today and says, boy, now that New York City's open today for the first time, I'm going to finally open up a pizza restaurant there. No one's saying that.
So there's going to be another, you know, I also, and I've written about this, is I think a second and third order, there are a lot of second and third order consequences of this. And I think crime is another one. I think that you're going to see an uptick in crime, especially now that cops and the society has changed their mindset on, you know, what they've been able to do. I'm not judging whether that's good. I mean, obviously, it's better if we have better police doing better work and not treating people poorly. But you're going to, when you have all these stores that are closed, and the criminal element now realizes, I can just go in and break in that store. It's been open in 3 months, or it's not coming back. It's got a for rent sign. There's going to be crime. And, you know, it's just going to be interesting to see how that develops as well.
Yeah. And by the way, this is obviously related to the people calling for defunding the police, which I don't know how I feel about it one way or the other, but it's not like the police were really solving crimes. You know, we always imagine, like, we read comic books as kids, like Superman sees with this X-ray vision, oh, someone's getting mugged, and he goes at the speed of light and he solves it. People were getting mugged and then going to the police. It's not like the police were really solving that many crimes while they were happening.
Right.
So, you know, the jobs of most municipal police was just to raise their revenues by giving traffic tickets and right. fining people. So it's not like, oh my God, there's a burglary in progress on Fifth Street. We've got to get there. That never happened except in TV shows. So I'm not sure where I stand on defund the police. I don't know, it's just been too much money that cities and states were spending. But
well, I mean, my thing is, what if a couple good ideas come? I don't, no one's, look, they're not, even when Minneapolis is not, I mean, they're saying, let's find an alternative solution, not let's just be free to roam and be crazy, right? And maybe we should listen, and maybe we should see if any good ideas come out of it that can be implemented on top of what we're doing or what we can improve upon. I'm always for good ideas. I just don't know what that is right now.
Well, let's think about it in terms of the data. So obviously a year ago, presidential candidates, Andrew Yang notably, saw in his data that people were concerned about losing their jobs to automation. Now, that period is over and everybody wants automation because you want employee-less stores. So there's less people and there's less, you're putting your employees less at risk if you don't have employees in the stores. Or doctors are looking for a robotic surgery solution so they don't have to touch their diseased patients on the operating table. So I think there's disruption, but there's going to be some eruption too, which is automation, robotics, big data, AI, which has both its good sides and its bad. All these things have their good sides and their bad sides. But there's going to be some eruptions too, like things that were going to happen 10 years from now are probably going to be more heavily researched and happen now, like college ending.
Right. I mean,
so that for me, that's an eruption, not a disruption.
Yeah, there you go. I love it.
Well, but I do worry about the second order effects of if there's a commercial real estate collapse, if there's a public transportation collapse, if all of these sources of revenue for large corporations and state and city governments go away, you're going to see a second wave of financial collapse that is more serious.
Yeah, you're not going to see a 10-year bull run again, right? Or a 12-year bull run. Like,
at least
you're going to see
yet.
More waves of slowdowns and then upticks and then corrections.
Right. Well, and the problem is this slowdown was artificial, right? The government held the gun to your head and said, you got to stay home, Phil, but we'll pay you for it. We'll give you that $1,200 check. We'll give you these loans. But the next wave of this is going to be an actual real recession. You know, so
yeah, but by the way, how many trillions did we just put in? Did we just borrow?
Well, you know, we're going to have to borrow at least 3 trillion, right? You had 2.2 trillion stimulus. Then you had,
I think you'll go to 4 or 5 when it's all said and done.
I think you'll go to 4 to 5 too. But you know, let's say 7 trillion. I would say somewhere between 5 and 7 trillion has been subtracted from the economy.
When does how long? Do we get till that bill comes to to bear? And
I don't know.
And
because
is it 2 years away? Because that will, there's gonna be a lot of volatility going forward. A lot of volatility, which
right,
goes back to the theme and the messages for business owners right now should be around safety, because the volatility is not going to stop.
Right, and there's gonna, like you say, there's definitely gonna be another stimulus. And look, I'm not the federal government, but there is. Right now, there is enough demand for the U.S. because the whole world is affected by this shutdown right now. So the whole world, there's no alternative to the U.S. dollar. It's not like you're going to say, well, I can't wait to get into the euro because the euro is in trouble because you have entire countries that are going to go bankrupt, like Greece, Italy, Spain. They're in big trouble. So it's not, U.S. is still the reserve currency of the world. So I think there is an opportunity for the euro, the U.S. to put out 100-year bonds at low interest rates, something they've never done before. And then you're kicking the can, but you're kicking the can down 100 years from now. So there
and that's
is
what
that
we
possibility.
Do. That's actually one of our great traits, I say this sarcastically, is we kick the can. I mean,
we kick the can and we line up at buffets. That's what we're the best at. Like cruise lines are opening up.
You can't be on a buffet right now.
Right, but when the cruise lines open up, I bet you people are going to go on cruises. Like they're Carnival just announced $28 a night. Like you could do your side hustle virtual assistant thing and live on a cruise for cheaper than rents in most cities.
It's incredible.
And have all your food for free on the buffet line.
That's incredible.
So okay, switching, it's not quite switching gears, but where do you see this taking place on elections? Because again, I see two things happening in terms of people switching opinions. We have the conventions coming up, so that tends to change the polls artificially. And we just, again, have, you know, we're going from lockdown where 40 million people were out of work to maybe a temporary V-shaped economy with the stock market at all-time highs again, whether it's temporary or not. Where do you see things happening? You're running a bunch of online campaigns on both sides. So where do you see it?
Right now, I'd say this. Let's just take the – I think it's easier for everybody if you frame it as far as how the presidential election looks, right? So there's no doubt that today Biden is in a really good spot. But here's what I would say we're seeing in the data. We just – in the month of June or the month of May, they added 2.5 million jobs. If you continue to see – people going back to work and the economy recovering, and you know, again, like last time I said, barring any unforeseen circumstances, right? Last time I was with you, and then all of a sudden this hit, right? But if you see the economy improving, and there is some hope of a vaccine or a treatment that could reduce the symptoms of the coronavirus by November, all things being equal, I think Trump wins. I think if the economy retracts and continues to, like, let's say we get 2.5 million jobs, next month it's another 2.5 million, all of a sudden there's just this crazy regression, right? I don't know, right? Let's just say we see a crazy regression. And you see a second spike of the coronavirus this fall, I think Biden is in position to win. I also know that the campaigns will be run on basically two issues. Besides those, one is Trump killed hundreds of thousands of people by not acting sooner. And Trump will say, I saved millions of lives, but that's how that argument will play out. And then Trump will say, Biden has dementia. And then everybody on the Democratic side would say, that's crazy. He's going to be a good steward. He's the safe choice. I'll tell you one thing we're seeing in the data that nobody's talking about right now, and I think is utterly fascinating. The people that are voting for – that say they're going to vote for Donald Trump this fall are voting because they're voting for – I think it's around 70% are voting because they support Trump, right? Like 70%, 30% are like hate the Democrats or whatever, right? That's a really high number in the standards we look at. Right now, I believe – I saw this the other day. 30% of Democrats are voting for Joe Biden. 70% are voting against Trump. So that enthusiasm gap is huge on the Democratic side. And now enthusiasm for the candidate, which right. ultimately the hate for Trump is very powerful. Do not get me wrong. I saw the midterms. That was all for hate for Trump. But ultimately, we saw this with Hillary. She had this gap in enthusiasm. As a reference, in 2012, I was reading this the other day that it was Obama had an 80% people were supporting him because they wanted to vote for Obama, not against anything. That was a massive number. As opposed to Romney, where a massive number of Republicans, and I know it was, in that 65-70% range, but were voting against Obama, right? And so Romney got crushed on Election Day. So you have to look, we're looking in deeper numbers. And although today, as it stands, right, things don't look so good for Trump and his campaign, you got to look at a few other factors. And the enthusiasm gap is something I'm paying attention to right now, because you do not see enthusiasm for Biden. You just see hate for Trump.
So let me ask you a question, because this is related to this. 2016, you say there was a little bit of an enthusiasm gap. People weren't as enthusiastic about Hillary, but Hillary did win the popular vote by 2 million votes. So like, if that was the way democracy was constructed in the US, she would be the president despite that enthusiasm
gap.
Absolutely.
That's right.
So maybe does the enthusiasm gap really matter? I mean, I can't think of another election though. Like you say, 2012 and 2008, clearly people were enthusiastic about Barack. 2004, I don't know if anybody was enthusiastic about anything.
They were enthusiastic. I was on that campaign.
Right.
There was an enthusiasm gap for Kerry. People weren't, they liked, I can't think of the vice presidential candidate,
Edwards.
John Edwards. There was actually more enthusiasm for Edwards than there was for Kerry.
Really?
Yep. But there was, a strong enthusiasm for Bush in that campaign.
And, 2000, it seemed like it was probably equal.
Correct. Yep.
1996, I'm willing to bet Clinton, there was an enthusiasm for him.
No, none for Dole. Enthusiasm for Dole. 2008, not a lot of enthusiasm for McCain, a massive amount for Barack Obama.
Yeah, yeah, and 1990.
And I'm not saying it's the end-all, be-all. I just think it's an interesting data barometer, data point that you should pay attention to.
Has that enthusiasm gone down? Have people lost faith because Trump, this probably wasn't his forte, dealing with, pandemic and protests? This is probably not where he shines.
So I would tell you, but people aren't paying attention. People are paying attention to the coronavirus or the protests. All the attention is being put elsewhere. There's no campaign right now. Biden is still in his basement, 6 days a week. And so what I tell you is, wait till September.
Yeah, we don't know until then.
That is when everything's going to pick up, and you will see those enthusiasm gaps, or you'll see those enthusiasm levels, and that'll be an interesting one to see right now, or see in the fall.
Yeah, I'm trying to. There's a question I had about that. I've asked people, I'm disappointed in both pretty heavily, as you know, but I've asked people, what's going on with Biden and the cognitive decline, and they don't really care because
they don't care.
They view it as a basically who's picking the Supreme Court justices, which I could understand. That's their issue, and then they just figure that Biden will hire people who are strong enough to support his presidency, and hopefully he'll have a good VP pick. And that's what they're betting on. So that kind of underlines what you're saying about the enthusiasm pick, the enthusiasm gap. I was going to say this. We were talking earlier about the authenticity of businesses and we were talking about the authenticity and sincerity of politicians who poll for their issues, and hopefully they don't switch their personal beliefs to fit the polls. And you said you like to work with candidates who actually align with the important issues of the voters. Mm-hmm. And the only two candidates that I've seen where they've consistently stuck with their issues over the decades in this particular election were Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump. Like, I watched a David Letterman episode from 1986 the other day, and young Donald Trump was on it. You would think he was said this yesterday. He was saying the exact same things that he says now. Like, why are we paying to defend all our allies in Europe and they're not, and they're, you know, they're not paying us, and they don't, you know, they're bankrupting us while we're defending them. He was saying the exact same things that he says now. And Bernie Sanders has been saying the same thing since the 70s. So I admire that about Sanders
and
also.
Are they, listen, Trump, I get everybody's point, but get past everything. And the fact is that he is who he is. You don't say he, you know, I mean, he is who he is. And people go, well, I mean, you either like him or you hate him, right? Sanders, you definitely see authenticity there. I mean, that he is who he is. Like, he says, I believe this. You can go pound sand otherwise, right? And, you know, he probably Trump is an outlier, but like Bernie probably understands what the polling is. I know this. They absolutely know what the polling says. And then he's going to be like, well, here are the three things here are the five things I want to talk about. But the polling's saying that two of those issues nobody wants me to talk about. So I'm going to talk about the other three. And that's how you do it. That's how you message it. That's how you do it authentically.
Right. Like, that's why I like that view of looking at it authentically. I think most of the other candidates were probably not, they didn't, well, Andrew Yang felt authentic to me, but
absolutely,
you know, but Sanders felt very authentic. Andrew Yang, I really liked, I really thought he was a smart guy. I didn't like the fear mongering on automation, but I believed in a lot of his final solutions. And Trump, I just saw an example where he's saying the same thing he said 35 years ago. So like you say, we'll see what happens. Does it matter who the VP picks are for Biden? This is going to air before, obviously, Biden picks his VP pick.
I don't know. I mean, it typically gets you a bump in the news, and then people really focus back on the main candidates. But
what's the strongest VP candidate ever in history, you think? Elections?
Oh, sway an election?
Like, did Gore help Clinton? Because it was an odd pick, Gore, because they're both from the South.
I don't know. It's a really good question. I don't know my history as well as I probably should. But I would, you know, in modern day, I think Dick Cheney was pretty good for not, again, let's, everybody's going to criticize him, whether you like him or hate him. I think Bush chose him because he said, if I were to die in office, this guy could assume my presidency. I don't know if we're going to see that from Biden. I think Biden has already boxed himself in by saying he's choosing a woman. And now with the protests, he's pretty much boxed himself in again, because you would think he's now going, oh my God, I've got to pick an African-American woman, which, if that's the most qualified candidate, good for him. I don't, you know, it's up to him what he wants to do. But if it isn't,
but your point is he's boxing in so that instead of having like 100 choices, maybe he has 5 choices.
Right. And so here's the disaster, right? Sarah Palin, right? That was the disaster. It was like the Hail Mary of the McCain campaign. And you know, it ended up being a disaster. I'm not saying picking a woman is going to be a disaster. I think we should choose a woman. I'd love for it to be a great woman candidate. But my point is that the point of the vice president is that, you know, if the president can't assume or do his duties on the job, this person is going to be president. Shouldn't it be the most qualified person? And Biden may find the most qualified person being either a woman or an African-American woman. I just don't know. But my point is that they box themselves in by listening and being around the woke mob. The woke mob has said you have to choose this person. And how does the American voter that doesn't want to talk publicly about what they believe in, how do they see that? Not that they're discriminating, but do they discriminate because they're a woman or an African-American woman? How do they see it and go, is that really the best candidate if Biden, which is a serious thought, is he cannot serve out a full term in office? And I think the Democrat, you know, Biden is probably worrying about that more than anything else right now.
Yeah, that's interesting. And by the way, on the history question, I would say the vice presidential candidate who might have had the most influence, 1960, Kennedy Johnson. Kennedy, the Northeastern, yeah,
Texas,
liberal,
good
Catholic. Johnson, the Senate majority leader, so he was already well-known nationally, but a good Southern, you know, Democrat who ironically completely turned away. The Democratic Party changed forever because, you know, he pissed off all the other Southern Democrats when he was president. correctly because they were all the segregationists and so on. But that's the only election I can think of in the past 100 years.
That's a good one.
Well, Phil, once again, this was so interesting. Like while you were talking, I was thinking of at least 5 or 6 emails I have to make with your with your message. I'm going to have to clip different parts of this podcast and send it to business owners I know specifically so that they could listen and change their ad campaigns pronto or at least improve them because of the messaging. You're really right. Everything you said really resonated with me. And I don't think these themes are going away so fast.
Yeah.
You know, because on the one hand, I do think people are going to be I saw this with the protests. Everybody who, the exact same people who said, oh my gosh, if you don't social distance, you're killing your grandma. Those exact people were like, oh, okay, go protest. Don't worry. 50,000 people crowded into Washington Square Park. You'll be okay. But so I did see that nobody gave a shit when they had something more important to do. But I don't think going to a comedy club is something more important to do after this is over.
I think everything is, again, think about it like this. Need versus want.
Mm.
If you position yourself as a want, as an option, you're in deep trouble. If you position your message around that you are a need for the consumer or your customer or client, that is going to give you a pathway to succeed.
That's such an important message. And I really should close the podcast on such an important message. But I'm going to go to predicted.org for 1 second and just see what you would bet on. Okay, and who knows if these bets are still going to be valid when this comes out. But Jay, we'll put this out as quickly as possible, okay? We'll make this, bump this to the front of the line. So predicted.org, so as you know, the contracts trade from 0 to 100 cents.
Right.
So who will win the 2020 Democratic vice presidential nomination? Kamala Harris is the front runner at 44 cents. You can buy yes or buy no. Val Demings is number 2 at 16 cents. Keisha Lance Bottoms, who I bought at 9 cents, is now trading at 11 cents. Elizabeth Warren's at 8 cents. And then the rest are
my long shot is Gillibrand or whatever.
Wow. She is. I don't even. Let me see where she is. She's not even. Oh, she's at trading at 1 cent. I'm buying that right now.
A long shot. I'm just saying it's good odds.
Yeah. Well, I'll buy 1,000 shares. $10. I could win. What can I win? I'll win $10,000 or whatever.
There you go.
Or maybe, I don't know. I can't do math anymore. I'm too old.
I mean, if I would tell you this, if Biden hadn't boxed himself in with saying he will choose a woman candidate, I would have put all my money on Cory Booker, who I think.
Yeah, Cory Booker, totally. But he's at 1 cent now.
Yep.
By the way, Joe Biden is at 1 cent for the Democratic vice presidential nomination. So, okay, here's a trickier one. This one actually was in contention, and I probably made a bad bet. But 2020 Democratic nominee, for a long time, Joe Biden was hanging out between 80 cents and 85 cents, even though he had pretty much clinched it. And so I bet on a no there. But now he's up to 91 cents now that he's actually officially clinched it. You know, Trump, I think, is at 92 or 93. Let me see where Trump's at. I don't know where he's at. I can't see it. So Joe Biden's at 91 cents. I made a mistake. I bought a no at 85 cents because I thought maybe that was why Cuomo was suggesting no primary in New York. I thought he was kind of, there was this backdoor plan to have a brokered convention, but I was wrong and my bet was wrong. Joe Biden's almost certainly going to be the nominee. So that's probably not a good bet. Would you bet? You would have to bet yes on, if I could bet now, I would bet yes on Joe Biden.
Yeah, my long shot would, we've talked about this, is our mutual acquaintance, Mark Cuban, would be my long shot.
I did bet on him at 1 cent for who will win the presidency.
I think he said he'd run it, as an independent. He wouldn't run as a Democrat or Republican, but...
Yeah, I think he said he wouldn't run as a Democrat.
And he said he'd have to be pushed in to do it.
Trump, this is where I view this as a short-term bet because, you know, as the contracts trade up, you could trade them just like stocks. Like, I wouldn't hold this one to the election.
Is this interview still going?
Yes, this interview is still going. You're going to make me some money here. Trump winning the popular vote. So I assume he'll get a bump in the Republican convention. He's trading right now at 22 cents to win the popular vote. So they're basically giving you 4.5 to 1 that he's going to lose, or 3.5 to 1 that he's going to lose the popular vote.
I mean, I think if you just look at past history and where we are as a country, I think he caught people off guard in 2016. No one's going to be caught off guard. I think it just comes down to enthusiasm gap. And ultimately, he's got to win the Electoral College. I just don't know about the popular vote.
All right. So 3.5 to 1. Maybe you think that's fair odds. That's fair enough. Electoral College, 2020 presidential election winner. Today, Biden is trading at an all-time high, 56 cents. Donald Trump is at 45 cents. Right. And that's kind of an all-time low for Trump, actually. Mm. And Biden's at an all-time high at 56 cents.
It's like a goodbye, because things will heat up in the fall and everybody's focused on the moment. So I would focus on what things would look like in the fall.
Do you think things will even out in the fall?
I absolutely do. And then if the economy roars back and if we don't have a second spike, you're going to see those odds shoot through the roof and go much higher for Trump.
An electoral college margin of victory, Democrats by 100, is trading at 13 cents.
I wouldn't take that.
Yeah, that might be a no. You can bet no on these things. That's a high margin of victory. That's huge.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's like Clinton Dole.
Yeah.
All right. There's no other interesting ones. There's probably local ones that are interesting, but they're happening like today, so it's not worth it. Let me just see if there's any other interesting. You know, there's even bets. You could bet how many times Trump will tweet per month, and a lot of people make a ton of money on that. But I haven't played around in that. That seems kind of silly. Will Pence be the 2020 GOP VP nominee?
Yeah.
That's trading at only 86 cents. That's probably a decent bet to just go 86 to 100 cents. It's not a lot of odds. It's almost, you know, no odds, but he's not going to, unless he dies, like Pence is going to be the VP nominee.
Very true.
Or unless Trump dies.
Yeah, he's not being replaced.
Let me see. I'm just curious. Oh, 2020 Republican nominee, Trump is at 93 cents. Again, he was at 92 cents when Biden was at 85 cents. Now Biden's at 91 cents. Trump's at 93 cents, but that's a lock. So, all right. There's no other interesting bets right now for me. Who's the next Supreme Court justice who's going to die?
Oh, God. I'm not getting into this. Like,
well, who is the next person to
retire?
Who is the next one person to leave the Supreme Court?
RBG or
yeah. So she's the winner of that. She's
in
the front runner.
She's had the toughest health issues, but Clarence Thomas as well. But I think we're so far into the election cycle that again, Biden wins in November, then you got to put it on RBG or Ruth Bader Ginsburg. If it's Trump wins, look for maybe Clarence Thomas, maybe somebody else.
Yeah, I've got a 13-to-1 odds in my favor betting on Stephen Breyer because he's like 81 years old.
Yeah,
and I got his contract at 7 cents, and he's trading right now
what
at
is
seven
Kennedy?
Cents.
Is he? Or is
Kennedy,
he gone?
He's gone. Didn't John Roberts replace Kennedy?
No. Anyway.
Oh no! Kavanaugh replaced Kennedy.
Yeah, that's it. That's right.
All right. Well, on that meaningless divergence where you had ended it so poetically, but Phil Stutz, once again, a great friend of the podcast and of mine. And, this is such a valuable podcast, probably the most valuable one we've done together. Like not that the other ones weren't valuable. They were interesting and fun and still valuable, but this one is people should directly apply it to all of their messaging. And I'm going to make money on predicted.org.
And so, yeah, and we'll continue to invest in this data and see how things change. And people can always download these reports for free.
Give the link again.
Go to Win Big Media and click on the COVID-19 consumer data tab. It's on the front page. And you can have a menu of all the reports you can download. They're all for free. We don't ask any opt-ins. We do not track you. We're not putting a pixel on there. No email, opt-ins, anything like that. It's all yours. Take it for free.
Thanks once again, Phil Stutz. We'll have you back again soon.
All right. See ya.
Bye.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.